A note to the reader. In July of 2011, I wrote and published a short story that brought me into contact with thousands of readers, took me around the world on book tours, and changed my life. I couldn't have dreamed that any of this was about to happen the day I published Wool. 2 years have passed, and now the publication of this book completes an amazing journey. I thank you for making that journey possible, and for accompanying me along the way. This is not the end, of course. Every story we read, every film we watch, continues on in our imaginations, if we allow it. Characters live another day. They grow old and die. New ones are born. Challenges crop up and are dealt with. There is sadness, joy, triumph, and failure. Where a story ends is nothing more than a snapshot in time, a brief flash of emotion, a pause. How and if it continues is up to us. My only wish is that we leave room for hope. There is good and bad in all things. We find what we expect to find. We see what we expect to see. I have learned that if I tilt my head just right and squint, the world outside is beautiful. The future is bright. There are good things to come. What do you see? Epilogue. Raff seemed unsure. He held a branch in his hand, weighed it purposefully, his pale face a dance of orange and gold from the flickering fire. "Just throw the damn thing in," Bobby yelled. There was laughter, but Raff frowned in consternation. "It's wood," he said, weighing the branch. "Look around you," Bobby roared. He waved at the dark limbs hanging overhead, the wide trunks. "It's more than we'll ever need." "Do it, lad." Eric kicked one of the logs, and a burst of sparks buzzed in the air as if startled from their slumber. Finally, Raff threw the branch in with the rest, and the wood began to crackle and spark. Juliet watched from her bedroll. Somewhere in the woods, an animal made a sound unlike any she'd ever heard. It was like a crying child, but sonorous and mournful. "What was that?" someone asked. In the darkness, they exchanged guesses. They conjured animals from children's books. They listened to Solo recount the many breeds from olden times that he had read about in The Legacy. They gathered around Elise with flashlights and pored through the stitched pages of her book. Everything was a mystery and a wonder. Juliet lay back and listened to the crackle from the fire, the occasional loud pop from a log, enjoying the heat on her skin, the smell of meat cooking, the peculiar odor of grass and so much soil. And through the canopy overhead, stars twinkled. The bright clouds from before, the ones that had hidden the sun as it set behind the hills, were parted by the breeze. They revealed, above her, 100 glittering pricks of light, 1,000. More of them everywhere, the longer she looked. They glittered in her tear-filled eyes as she thought of Lucas and the love he had aroused in her. And something hardened in her chest, something that made her jaw clench tight to keep from crying. A renewed purpose in her life. A desire to reach the water on Elise's map, to plant these seeds, to build a home above ground and live there. "Jewel? You asleep?" Elise stood above her, blocking the stars. Puppy's cold nose pressed into Juliet's cheek. "Come here," Juliet said. She scooted over and patted her bedroll, and Elise sat down and nestled against her. "What are you doing?" Elise asked. Juliet pointed up through the canopy. "I'm looking at the stars," she said. "Each of those is like our sun. But they're a long way away." "I know the stars," Elise said. "Some of them have names."
"They do?"
"Yeah." Elise rested her head back against Juliet's shoulder and gazed up with her a moment. The unknown thing in the woods howled.
"See those?" Elise asked. "Don't those look like a puppy to you?"
Juliet squinted and searched the sky.
"Could be," she said.
"Yeah.
Maybe they do. We can call those ones Puppy.
That's a good name, Juliet agreed. She laughed and wiped at her eyes.
And that one's like a man.
Elise pointed at a wide spread of stars, tracing the features.
There's his arms and legs. There's his head.
I see him, Juliet said.
You can name him,
Elise told her, giving her permission. Deep in the woods, the hidden animal let out another howl, and Elise's puppy made a similar sound. Juliet felt tears roll down her cheeks.
Not that one, she said quietly. He already has a name.
The fires settled down as the night wore on. Clouds swallowed stars, and tents gobbled children. Juliet watched shadows move in one of the tents. Other adults too jittery to sleep. Somewhere, someone was still cooking strips of meat from the animal Solo had shot with his rifle, the long-limbed deer. Juliet had marveled at Solo's transformation these last 3 days. A man who grew up alone was now a leader of men, more prepared for surviving in this world than any of them. Juliet would ask for another vote soon. Her friend Solo would make an excellent mayor. In the distance, a silhouette stood over a fire and prodded it with a stick, coaxing more heat from dying embers. Clouds and fire, these two things her people had only ever feared. Fire was death in the silo, and clouds consumed those who dared to leave. And yet, as the clouds closed in overhead, and flames were agitated higher, there was comfort in both. The clouds were a roof of sorts, the fire warmth. There was less here to fear. And when a bright star revealed itself through a sudden gap, Juliet's thoughts returned, as ever, to Lucas. He had told her once, with his star chart spread across that bed in which they made love, that each of those stars could possibly hold worlds of their own, and Juliet remembered being unable to grasp the thought. It was audacious. Impossible. Even having seen another silo, even having seen dozens of depressions in the earth that stretched to the horizon, she could not imagine entire other worlds existing. And yet, she had returned from her cleaning and had expected others to believe her claims, equally bold. A stick cracked behind her, a rustle of leaves, and Juliet expected to find Elise returning to complain that she couldn't sleep. Or perhaps it was Charlotte, who had joined her by the fire earlier that night, had remained largely quiet while seeming to have much she wanted to say. But Juliet turned and found Courtney there, white smoke steaming from something in her hand.
"Mind if I sit?" Courtney asked.
Juliet made room, and her old friend joined her on the bedroll. She handed Juliet a hot mug of something that smelled vaguely of tea, but more pungent.
"Can't sleep?" Courtney asked.
Juliet shook her head.
"Just sitting here, thinking about Luke."
Courtney draped an arm across Juliet's back.
"I'm sorry," she said.
"It's okay. Whenever I see the stars up there, it helps put things into perspective."
"Yeah?
Help me then." Juliet thought how best to do that and realized she hardly had the language. She only had a sense of this vastness, of an infinite possible worlds, that somehow filled her with hope and not despair. Turning that into words wasn't easy. "All the land we've seen these past days," she said, trying to grasp what she was feeling.
"All that space. We don't have a fraction of the time and people to fill it all."
"That's a good thing, right?" Courtney asked.
"I think so. Yeah.
And I'm starting to think that those we sent out to clean, they were the good ones. I think there were a lot of good people like them who just kept quiet, who were scared to act. And I doubt there was ever a mayor who didn't want to make more room for her people, didn't want to figure out what was wrong with the outside world, didn't want to suspend the damn lottery. But what could they do, even those mayors? They weren't in charge. Not really. The ones in charge kept a lid on our ambitions. Except for Luke. He didn't stand in the way of me. He supported what I was doing, even when he knew it was dangerous. And so, here we are.
Courtney squeezed her shoulder and took a noisy sip of tea, and Juliet lifted her mug to do the same. As soon as the warm water hit her lips, there was an explosion of flavor, a richness like the smell of flower stalls in the bazaar, and also the upturned loam of a productive grow plot. It was a first kiss. It was a lemon and rose. There were sparks in her vision from the heady rush. Juliet's mind shuddered.
"What is this?" she asked, gasping for air. "This is from the supplies we pulled?"
Courtney laughed and leaned against Juliet. "It's good, right?"
"It's great! It's amazing!"
"Maybe we should go back for another load," Courtney said. "If we do that, I might not carry anything else." The two women laughed quietly. They sat together, gazing up at the clouds and the occasional star for a while. The fire nearest them crackled and spat sparks, and a handful of quiet conversations drifted deep into the trees, where bugs sang a chorus, and some unseen beast howled.
"You think we'll make it?" Courtney asked, after a long pause. Juliet took another sip of the miraculous drink. She imagined the world they might build with time and resources, with no rules but what's best and no one to pin down their dreams.
"I think we'll make it," she finally said. "I think we can make any damn thing we like."
This has been Dust, written by Hugh Howey, narrated by Tim Gerard Reynolds at Brickshop Audio Incorporated. Copyright 2013 by Hugh Howey. Production copyright 2013 by Hugh Howey.
A hole was made big enough to squeeze through, and Juliet took the honors. A flashlight in hand, she crawled over a pile of rubble and between bent fingers of iron rod. The air beyond the generator room was cool, like the deep mines. She coughed into her fist, the dust from the digging tickling her throat and nose. She hopped down to the floor beyond the gaping hole.
"Careful," she told the others behind her. "The ground's not even."
Some of the unevenness was from the chunks of concrete that had fallen inside. The rest was just how the floor stood. It appeared as though it had been gouged out by the claws of a giant. Shining the light from her boots to the dim ceiling high above, she surveyed the hulking wall of machinery before her. It dwarfed the main generator. It dwarfed the oil pumps. A colossus of such proportions was never meant to be built, much less repaired.
Her stomach sank. Her hopes of restoring this buried machine diminished.
Raff joined her in the cool and dark, a clatter of rubble trailing him. The albino had a condition that skipped generations. His eyebrows and lashes were gossamer things, nearly invisible. His flesh was as pale as pig's milk. But when he was in the mines, the shadows that darkened the others, like soot, lent him a healthful complexion. Juliet could see why he had left the farms as a boy, to work in the dark. Raff whistled as he played his flashlight across the machine. A moment later, his whistle echoed back, a bird in the far shadows mocking him.
"It's a thing of the gods," he wondered aloud.
Juliet didn't answer. She never took Raff as one to listen to the tales of priests. Still, there was no doubting the awe it inspired. She had seen Solo's books and suspected that the same ancient peoples who had built this machine had built the crumbling but soaring towers beyond the hills. The fact that they had built the silo itself made her feel small. She reached out and ran her hand across metal that hadn't been touched nor glimpsed for centuries, and she marveled at what the ancients had been capable of. Maybe the priests weren't that far off, after all.
"Ye gods,"
Dawson grumbled, crowding noisily beside them.
"What are we to do with this?"
"Yeah, Jules," Raff whispered, respecting the deep shadows and the deeper time. "How are we supposed to dig this thing out of here?"
We're not, she told them. She scooted sideways between the wall of concrete and the tower of machinery. This thing is meant to dig its own way out.
You're assuming we can get it running,
Dawson said. Workers in the generator room crowded the hole and blocked the light spilling in. Juliet steered her flashlight around the narrow gap that stood between the outer silo wall and the tall machine, looking for some way around. She worked to one side, into the darkness, and scrambled up the gently sloping floor. We'll get it running, she assured Dawson. We just got to figure out how it's supposed to work.
Careful,
Raff warned as a rock kicked loose by her boots tumbled toward him. She was already higher up than their heads. The room, she saw, didn't have a corner or a far wall. It just curled up and all the way around. It's a big circle, she called out, her voice echoing between rock and metal. I don't think this is the business end.
There's a door over here,
Dawson announced. Juliet slid down the slope to join him and Raff. Another flashlight clicked on from the gawkers in the generator room. Its beam joined hers in illuminating a door with pins for hinges. Dawson wrestled with a handle on the back of the machine. He grunted with effort, and then metal cried out as it reluctantly gave way to muscle.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.